the Redskins. Hail victory! Praise on the warpath. Fight for all we see.
Green driven back to midfield on the far side. He's got the ball up to the 45, far side 40. A seam to the 35, vaults a man to the 30. Breaks to the near side 25. Watch out to the 20. Near side 10. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
This is Burgundy and Gold Flashback. Now, here's Mike Richmond.
You are listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback, where the tradition of a storied NFL franchise, the Washington Redskins, stays alive. I'm Mike Richmond, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia and the Washington Redskins Football Vault. My website is RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. My guest is a Redskins legend. One of the most prolific passers in NFL history, he threw for more than 32,000 yards, played 18 seasons in the NFL, the last 11 in D.C. from 1964 through 74. A perennial All-Pro and, of course, a Hall of Famer. You know who he is, Sonny Jurgensen. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Mike. Nice to be with you.
I want to say you were always a great help, when I interviewed you for my books, and always there for me, so I really, really appreciate that. So how are you doing? I want to say happy belated birthday. I know you recently turned 80.
You're right. I don't tell anybody.
Also, this is your 34th season as part of the Redskins broadcast team, and I want to talk to you about that later, as well as your storied career. First, let's get into the current Redskins. As we speak, they're 1-4. Three games behind both the Eagles and Cowboys in the NFC East, two behind the Giants, and of course they're coming off that 27-17 loss to the defending Super Bowl champion Seahawks, and also looking ahead to another tough game against the 3-1 Arizona Cardinals in Glendale. So let me ask you, are you disappointed at this start, this 1-4 start, or were you expecting more, or is this kind of where you saw the team at this point?
Well, I am a little disappointed. I thought they would be better than this. And it's unfortunate, you know, that Griffin got hurt. That set them back. And, you know, they've a tough part of the schedule here with Dallas coming up. And the Cardinals, of course, the Cardinals are beat up, and they don't have a quarterback. But yeah, I'm a little disappointed in the record, and they could have, you know, played better.
In terms of Jay Gruden being a first year coach, though, are you willing to give him sort of a grace period with regarding the productivity of the team and how well they're doing?
Well, no, I don't think that. you know, it's they should have been better, and you know, they thought the defense was going to be better. Of course, they got, you know, some injuries that hurt them, and that is something that they're going to have to live with. And they're going to have to get the season turned around in a hurry and get it going now because, you know, the season being 1-4 isn't good when everybody else is 4-1 in your division except the Giants, of course, who laid it on us. And they were 3-2.
I think the division itself is shaping up to be much tougher than everyone was saying prior to the season, so you're exactly right. I think the Redskins need to get this turned around and fast. Regarding Gruden, though, do you think he was dealt a difficult hand in the sense that the Redskins had traded those three number one draft picks and a number two for Griffin in 2012? I only call it two number ones because one was kind of a swap. And then also the Redskins had that salary cap penalty where they were docked $36 million. So do you think Gruden was dealt a difficult hand?
Well, yes. Yeah, he certainly was. You know, that the Redskins were themselves when the $36 million bust on that was tough for him. But he knew that coming in, and that's something that he can't do anything about. He knew that coming in, and had to make the best of it.
You mentioned RG3 earlier and the fact that he was injured and has been out for a while. And that begs the question of Kirk Cousins. Want to get your take on him. He has, in my opinion, he's been inconsistent. And while he had the terrible game against the Giants, 4 interceptions, I thought he had a decent game against Seattle. But the Redskins have to live with Cousins right now. What do you think of Cousins, and in terms of where he needs to improve?
Well, he's a nice young man. He's smart. He gets the most out of his abilities. He lost composure and was staring down people in the Giant game, and he did a better job of it against Seattle. And it's something that I think that he feels he's getting better, and it's just something that they're going to have to live with until they get Robert back. And it's something that Kurt, I think, will make improvements. He's made improvements all along. And it's something that he's going to have to learn on the go, more or less. And I think that they are adjusting to that.
What do you think, though? Let me give you a hypothetical scenario, one we would really wish for, in that he gets it turned around. His play improves considerably. The Redskins start winning. And then Griffin is ready to come back, say, after the bye week on November 16th. What does Gruden do at that point? Whose team is it?
Well, it's coordinated to what the record is, and that's what it's going to be, because the bottom line is winning. You have to win. And, if they win these next 3 or 4 games, then he may have a decision to make whether or not he's going to put Robert right back in there or not. But, that has to do with the record. If you're 2-6, and or something, whatever it would add up to be, then he's got an easy decision to make. But it's something that we're going to have to wait and see on that.
I personally think the Redskins owe it to themselves as well to evaluate RG3, because they have to know this coming offseason if they're going to extend his contract after his 4th year. So I think they owe it to themselves to be able to evaluate him.
You mean they have to play him to evaluate him?
Yes, I believe so. But I think it's a very sticky situation. If Cousins plays well and the Redskins start winning, then at the same time, the Redskins have to ask themselves, well, what do we do with Griffin? We have to evaluate him at some point. I think it's going to be a very, very difficult decision to make.
That's interesting. Yeah, I can see that. But, that's something that's something we don't have to make.
Yes.
The decision. They have to make it.
Yes, exactly right. Well, it's going to be very interesting to watch. Right now, we need to go to break. Here's This Week in Redskins History.
Hey, it's Mike Richmond, the official Redskins historian and author of the Washington Redskins Football Vault and the Redskins Encyclopedia. From the pages of my books comes This Week in Redskins History. Kenny Houston is a Redskins legend, a Hall of Fame safety, but he's most remembered for crafting one of the most indelible moments in Redskins lore and in the storied Redskins-Cowboys rivalry. With 24 seconds left in a Monday night game on October 8, 1973, Dallas trailed 14-7 and faced 4th and goal at the 4. Walt Garrison caught a pass at the 1, but Houston picked the powerful fullback off his feet as he tried reaching the end zone and bulldogged him to the ground short of the goal line. After briefly going silent, the sellout crowd at RFK Stadium erupted into a deafening roar. Houston called it the defining play of his 14-year career. For more on Redskins history, check out my website at RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. I'm Mike Richman for This Week in Redskins History.
Welcome back to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. I'm Redskins historian Mike Richman, back with Redskins Hall of Fame quarterback Sonny Jurgensen, as iconic a figure as there is in Redskins history. Sonny, thanks again for coming on the show.
Pleasure.
Like I mentioned earlier, this is your 34th season broadcasting Redskins games in the booth. The first quarter century, it was you, Frank Herzog, Sam Huff, and past decades been you, Larry Michael, now with Chris Cooley, and got Doc Walker doing his thing. What has this experience been like for you over more than three decades?
Well, it's been fun. You know, we've went through the Gibbs years when they won, and it, you know, you're kind of close to the team, and you're around it, and you of course pulling for them, but it's something that. It's been quite an experience to broadcast all these games and to see the guys come up and go on and to see their development.
What have been your most memorable moments in the booth?
I guess the game against Denver, the when they scored all the touchdowns.
Super Bowl 22.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was because of the suddenness of it. Denver was slanting their line, and one way or the other, and they ended up guessing wrong. You know, they ran two plays back to back the same way. They would guess right one play, and the next play they'd guess wrong, and Timmy Smith was running the length of the field. And then the passes hit Doug. That was quite a showing, and it was quite a win.
I remember those holes in that Super Bowl game. You could drive a truck through them. They were so huge. Regarding your own career, your playing career, you were part of the Redskins' offensive explosion in the 1960s. I should say you played your first six seasons in Philadelphia with the Eagles. You were an all-pro there, but you were traded here in the 1964 offseason. And in the 60s, of your total 32,000 yards passing in your career, most of them were during that period from 64 through 1970 before George Allen got here. Five seasons of 3,000 or more passing yards in total in your career, five Pro Bowls, four All-Pro teams. Do you think back often on those years from the 60s? You had that famous receiving trio, Charlie Taylor, Bobby Mitchell, Jerry Smith, arguably one of the greatest trios in NFL history.
Well, it was, you know, the fact that we threw the ball well. And if we had just moved people around a little bit, you know, we didn't have motion in those days behind the line of scrimmage before the snap of the ball, because Jerry Smith was like, 190 pounds, and they could jam him at the line of scrimmage. And I remember playing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they would double the outside receivers, so you were thinking tight end, and they would jam him at the line of scrimmage, and that was it made it tough on us. And I've often thought about, when Gibbs was moving all the people around and everything. If we'd have just brought him out from flanker and had him off the line of scrimmage some, you know, but moving, then they couldn't have jammed him, and we would have been able to attack their defense a lot better. And it wasn't, you know, gosh, in those days, you know, they could knock receivers down until you put the ball in the air. So it was a different era of throwing the ball, and it made it a lot different as far as trying to compete.
Well, I was going to ask you about the more liberal passing rules of today, which you are saying by the defenders being able to jam receivers at the line back in your day. Regarding the liberal rules of today, do you wish that you had the ball in your hands today, given the fact that receivers can't be touched, the defender can't breathe on them after 5 yards past the line of scrimmage?
That's why I've enjoyed the game, how the game has changed. You know, because even blocking in the line of scrimmage, run blocking, they had to block with their arms in. They couldn't extend their arms. God, pass blocking, they had to have their arms into their chest. And, gosh, I was talking to Russ Grimm about it one day, and he said, "You're kidding." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Nobody can block that way." And I said, "I know it. Yeah, I can show you the scars." But because of that, you know, it was just a much more difficult time to throw the ball. They had to put, the league did it, they put, you know, offense into the game. And it sells.
Right. Well, the approach on the part of the league and the decision makers is obviously to make the game more entertaining and bring people to the seats. Regarding Jerry Smith, you have mentioned him already, and I definitely wanted to ask you about him. He had 421 career catches, set a Redskins all-time record for a tight end until it was broken by Chris Cooley. And he was speaking with people like yourself and his teammates and so forth, they said he was so tough. It just had this ferocity about him. Do you think, regarding his accomplishments and the fact that he did it in that era when it was so much more difficult, should he be in the Hall of Fame today?
Well, people have asked me that before, and I think he could certainly get some consideration for it. But there's so many people nowadays. There's so many people that are becoming eligible every year that it makes it tough for people like him. About Sonny Randall and you know, people like that, and Joe Jacoby, and you know, it's just so many people that are becoming eligible every year because of the number of players.
Right, and he would have to be selected through the seniors committee, which is only,
right,
I think, 2 players per year at most. Vince Lombardi, you played for him from one season, 1969. The Redskins finished 7-5-2 that year. It was their first winning season in 14 years. And for you, it was a wonderful season. Pro Bowl, league highs in completions, attempts, passing yards. And you've told me, and you've said it elsewhere, Lombardi was the greatest coach you ever played for. Why is that?
Well, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing, and he was the best coach. That was the most fun season that I had in the 18 years because of the way he approached it. You were prepared. You had great preparation. And it was, you never were surprised on the field. And it was just, it was great. You know, and he told me after the season, he said, "Now that you know the system, you didn't know the system, and you completed 65% of your passes," he said, "now you'll complete 70, now that you know the system well." And, of course, that was before training camp when he died. And it was a sad occasion when he died, because I think that was the start of turning around the Redskins.
Well, he was known to say, you know, if only I had that redhead in Green Bay. Imagine what you could have done there with that team. That would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, he said he it was quite a compliment that he paid me, but you know, that was something that I look back on it and was so happy that I had that opportunity to play for him that one year.
Exit question. I want to get your prediction on the season and what you... We've already talked about the Redskins. They need to turn it around. They have a tough game coming up against the Cardinals, who are they're in a precarious situation, though, regarding their quarterback situation there. They have one healthy quarterback and rookie Logan Thomas. But things aren't going to get any easier for the Redskins. They have four more NFC East games. They have the Colts, the 49ers. Is this salvageable, maybe 8-8 or 9-7?
Well, 8-8. I said 9-7 at the beginning of the year. And, you know, things haven't gone well. And now they could have double-digit losses. And you hope that's not the case. But 6-10 and or 7-9, you know, look like possibilities.
Well, we have to remember that the Redskins are in a rebuilding period right now. So for me, I'm trying to have as much patience as I can with them. Well, I love the conversation, Sonny. Thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll cross paths at FedEx, Redskins Park, or elsewhere, or Redskins alumni events. And I want to thank my audience for listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. And thanks to my producer, Mike Engel, for his work running the board. I'm Mike Richmond. My website is RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. For now, hail to the Redskins.